Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Eleven. Hi. Bad night in the Senate. Bad night if you're Scaramucci. Well, I guess that all adds up to not the best night for America. But the congressional thing is just it's all a big what's that game Roe does? Ruse or lose?
News or ruse?
Oh, it's a ruse, is what it is. I'll explain here in a little bit. We got a great kid of the week follow up this morning from one of our favorite folks. So we'll get to that.
Can I make one addition / correction? I teased Nick DiGilio coming up with movies. We did that yesterday, of course. It's, as you say, loose first call.
Did you bump your head?
I did, yeah.
Okay. David Eigenberg's coming in later from Chicago Fire.
Oh, I love him. Yeah. I saw him last week at the Cirque du Soleil.
Pete McMurray will be with him because David needed a ride.
You mean Pete needed a ride? Or?
No, Pete was driving. David needed a ride. This week on Sunday Night with Megyn Kelly, there is a story about Orr Academy's basketball team, and Craig Melvin, the correspondent and host from MSNBC, will be on this morning to plug that. Dean later, an American in Paris, one of their principal cast members, will be on as well, as we have a big Friday show for you. And Lose First Call coming up. So here's the deal on Lose First Call. Obviously, you need to be on the phone. Otherwise, you would not be on Lose First Call. This is an opportunity for you to call, ask a question about your house, your home, your place, your thing. And you can ask Lou the question today as opposed to trying to get in tomorrow, because tomorrow the calls, they flood in, and it's very difficult to get Lou.
Yep,
on this show, we're wide open. 312-981-7200 if you want to call and ask Lou a question now. And State Comptroller Susana Mendoza will be on after Beth Purvis, the Illinois Education Secretary. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, is there a chance you and Dean are going to do the Frenchmen later?
There's always a chance.
Talking about Paris?
Oh, yeah, there's always a chance. An American in Paris? Two Americans in Paris.
All right.
Susana Mendoza, people, or she, were listening yesterday when Illinois' Education Secretary Beth Purvis made a statement about money that she ought to release that she's not releasing.
Right.
She claims that that's BS, and she wanted to come on to talk about it. Now, I'm just saying this right up front. Mm-hmm. If you're paying attention to the show, you know I had a huge problem with the comptroller and the way she handled something. I'm not going to relitigate any of this. I expect that she won't either. We're moving forward.
Right, and the topic is education funding right now.
Right, so that's the plan. But I will ask her the questions that I would hope you would want me to ask coming up in a little bit. Though I do, I mean, I appreciate her coming on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And she called yesterday and volunteered, too. So,
well, they called at 9:55.
I know.
They called at five minutes before the end of the show.
Right. That's why today she has much more time to talk with us.
Right, exactly. Let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Overnight, while you were sleeping, the Maverick walked in, gave it the thumb, and it was over. John McCain did his John McCain thing.
Yep.
While Mike Pence, the vice president, stood in wait, planning on being the tie-breaking vote in the Senate, McCain walked in, held out his hand, and went thumbs down to the skinny repeal. The skinny repeal was this bogus bill that the Senate hoped to pass to get to the House and then go into committee and work out some alleged repeal and replace of Obamacare. This would be the replace part, obviously. What they weren't expecting was that they couldn't possibly convince John McCain, who flew back 2 days or 2 weeks after having a brain tumor, flew back to vote to get the process rolling.
Yeah.
They weren't expecting him to shut it down. But he, Susan Collins, and Senator Murkowski from Alaska were the three senators on the Republican side joining with the 48 Democrats to shut it down. What does this mean for you? This means Obamacare lives. Now, lives for the people in Iowa, for the people in Kentucky, for people around the country where they don't have access to the exchanges or insurance companies have pulled out. It's a big problem. It does need to be addressed. There's a lot of things that needed to be fixed by Obamacare, but the sham that Congress was pulling wasn't even close, because all this is politics. The senators wanted to, they didn't want this thing to pass as it was. They didn't want this thing to go into law because they know it's a bad bill. They wanted to be able to go back to their districts this weekend, next weekend, whenever they finally get to leave town. And they wanted to go home for the summer, for their break, and say, I did what I said I would do. I came as close as I could, but at least I stood up to what I promised you. So now they have their story to tell.
Right.
And there is no change in your health insurance for the foreseeable future.
There was an audible gasp, too, by the way, when John McCain voted no.
Absolutely.
In the chamber.
Absolutely. What did you say, Andrew?
No, I was going to say, and when will lawmakers learn that just renaming something? I love how we renamed it the skinny repeal about midweek last week, or actually probably earlier this week.
It was
doesn't
earlier this week.
Change.
If there's no substance
anything.
To it.
Anything. There
no
is
substance
no
to it
substance. Reminds me of a potbelly sandwich, too.
Well, those are good, though.
I
this
know.
This is bad. Those are good.
And then the irony, it brings it all the way back to potbelly, which is fat.
Skinny fat.
Right.
Yeah, listen, all of us need more sleep. Next. Anthony Scaramucci, the new White House communications director. Let that sink in. The White House communications director, the man in charge of making sure the messaging from the president is a positive message that he can put forward so that his agenda can be moved, gave a no-holds-barred, non-off-the-record interview to a guy named Ezra, was it Ezra Klein? I think it was Ezra Klein, with The New Yorker. In it, he disparaged two colleagues who work with him in the Oval Office, in the inner circle of the president. One is Steve Bannon. The other is Ryan Priebus. He used profanity in it that I cannot repeat here. He dropped multiple F-bombs. He referred to one of them as Steve Bannon as performing a physical act upon himself, which, frankly, he's not flexible enough to do.
Oh, my God.
All in The New Yorker, in this vulgarity-laced phone call late night a couple of nights ago. It came out yesterday. In any other company on the planet, this guy would have been fired immediately. The president hasn't even commented on it. Anthony Scaramucci, the communications director.
Guys, is it possible that we died back in November and this is all sort of a...
It does feel like an unending bad dream. But I've got to... I'll break this down a little bit later on as time allows. President Trump likely to sign a tough new sanctions bill that includes proposed measures targeting Russia, a remarkable concession that the president has yet to sell his party on, his hopes for forging a warmer relationship with Moscow. And if he does sign it, and he really doesn't have any other option... Well, what does that mean for, say, the summer picnic with Vlad? Time will tell, but Trump at this point appears will sign it, probably without comment. Pakistan had their prime minister removed overnight. See, this is how other countries do it. You don't like a guy, you go in, you take him out.
You stage a coup.
The country's Supreme Court disqualified Nawaz Sharif from office after accusations of corruption, a ruling that's likely to shift a pretty... tumultuous political balance to begin with. And then this. Cubs beat the White Sox 6-3. So they take the Crosstown Series 3-1?
They take the Crosstown Cup, which the White Sox had held since first time the Cubs have won it since 2013.
They're at a season high, 7 games above 500, and lead the Central by what?
Game and a half.
Okay.
Look like a different team.
Guys, there's an update, by the way, too, to the Russia story that's just come in, to the sanction story. Russia has expelled hundreds of embassy staff from Russia this morning.
Makes sense.
So,
yeah, makes sense. Yeah, we didn't give them their property back, so now they're kicking some Americans out. And finally this. The Picasso, which stands in Daley Plaza, turns how old? Anyone? Anyone? On August 8th, the Picasso's birthday. The Picasso turns how old? How old?
The big 50.
50.
Wow.
50 years old. The party is called Everyone's Picasso, which includes a ceremony, re-unveiling music, and somebody gets to take it home.
No.
Yes, somebody gets to take it home. Bring your truck because somebody might win the Picasso. They're selling raffle tickets, and somebody could win the Picasso. By the way, we're going to do the same thing with the bean. Somebody gets the bean.
Does it?
Can you unassemble it or disassemble it to get it home?
You need a Chevy Silverado. Yeah,
of course.
You have to drive it for you.
That tow package?
Yes.
When I originally put that on the top six, in my head I thought, oh, well, these guys probably remember when it happened. But you were six and in New York when we got it, and Dave was a little bit
Dave was 29.
But he was in D.C., so.
Dave was 29.
And I wasn't born.
Maybe John DeCasse remembers.
I was at the ceremony.
When they first put it up.
Yeah.
You were born.
You know, we were talking about on the way in today. I was playing golf the other day with three guys, and I looked at the three guys, and this has only happened one other time in my life, other than playing golf with my kids. I was the oldest guy in the group. That's never happened before. I've never been the oldest guy in the group.
Yeah, well, welcome to my life.
Right, I was going to say.
Did everyone have great respect for you then, being the elder?
Oh, please. You know Pat Brady. Top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-minute men. You want a station desktop indoor weather situation station. Here's what you do. Be the, what do you want to go, seventh caller? Sixth caller. Oh, I get it. Top six at six. Sixth caller, you guys. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-minute men. 6:22, we get to Lou after we get to traffic and a little bit of business, and then we're back.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show.
It's Lou Manfredini at Channel 9, I assume.
That's me.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm terrific.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. We'll get to Pam in just a second. Before we do that, though, should we aerate our lawns? Too early?
No, I would rake the lawns. We've had so much moisture. I think what people are going to start to see with their lawns is they may see some weed problems that they didn't have before because of so much moisture. Mm-hmm. And there is crabgrass that creeps in. A lot of times, too, if people have landscaping services, landscapers can go from lawn to lawn, and that can sometimes spread some weeds. And so what I would do, if anything, is if you're noticing areas of your lawn where, like, ooh, that look at all those weeds coming in. There is a brand-new product that Scotts came out with, which drives me crazy that this is the name of it, but it's Roundup for Lawns. So Roundup, as a lot of people know, is a total kill weed killer.
Yeah.
And everyone's known that forever.
So that seems like bad marketing.
Right. And I even talked to the people about it. Well, you know, our studies have shown. I go, well, okay, whatever. So, you know, because people come into a store and they say, oh, I just need that Roundup for Lawns. And they don't want to talk to anybody. And they grab the wrong bottle and take it home. And all of a sudden, their lawn is dead. So if you're going to buy it, really look carefully. And the bottle's the exact same color, too.
Which, what are they doing? Like, what a terrible idea.
I know, but okay, so all of that, you know, on the marketing side, the product works. So if you're noticing that, they've got one where you can spray it with a pump spray, just, you know, the trigger spray, and some you can connect to a hose if you have a larger area.
All right, before Anthony Scaramucci comes in here and starts cursing at both
of
us, let me go to Pam.
Starsky and Mooch.
Didn't know that was going to come back. Hey, Pam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. What's your question for the great Lou Manfredini?
Hi, Lou.
Hi.
My question is, I had a tree cut down, and they left all the pile of the leftover there, and I took it out and put grass in there. Since it's been cut down, the tree is sprouting everywhere.
Right.
In my whole lawn, in my neighbor's lawn, everywhere. How do I stop that?
Did they grind out the stump or no?
Yes.
Okay. It's going to take a while. That area really needs to be treated. You need to actually kill the stump. And there's some products you can buy. One is called Stump Kill that you need to uncover that area where the soil is over the top of the stump and apply this to it. Those seedlings are going to continue to come up for a little while. Probably, you know, you could have an issue with that for, you know, up to 18 months. And you want to treat those areas with that stump killer then put the dirt over the top, then seed. When you get a few of those seedlings, that's an area where you could use a spot killer, even like a Roundup, but you want to cut and spray so it goes down to the roots and kills it. They're actually, even on the Roundup side, they make a product that's almost like a roll-on for antiperspirant, that where you can specifically go to the plant and just kind of rub it, because you don't need much. And if you do that on each individual shoot, which I know sounds like a lot of work, you'll control the product so it doesn't damage anything else. And the way that that Roundup works is it goes right to the root and it kills it at that point, and then it shouldn't come back.
But what I don't understand here is, Pam, you're saying that little seedlings are popping up in your neighbor's lawn?
Oh, yeah, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, what is that? I mean, is that coming off a root, Lou?
Well, when they cut the tree, how long ago did they cut the tree down?
Spring.
Yeah. I mean, it probably spread all kinds of seed when they were cutting it all down, and it's just, you know, it's now germinating now. So it'll eventually come. Yeah.
Okay. Because I've got to take a tree down in front of my house.
Right. You do, or you have?
No, I've got to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Not an inexpensive proposition.
Less than I thought, though.
Yeah.
It's not,
I get that Steve Cochran money.
No. Yeah. Listen, Pam, hold on. You're a big winner. Stand by.
You know what you could do to really save money? Take a strap, tie it to that sweet-looking Chevy Tahoe that you have.
Yes.
And just pull.
Oh, like I do when I take a tooth out.
Exactly. Just drive it down the road and say, hey, could you guys do something with this?
That seems right. Yeah, that seems totally
just
right.
Just make sure you tie it in the right spot so it doesn't fall on
But
you.
This is a big evergreen that's probably, I don't know, 25, 30 feet tall.
Wow.
And I figured it'd be, $3,000-$5,000.
$1,200.
Yeah, not even close to.
So when you
what
say you're removing the tree, you're saying that loosely. You're calling someone to remove the tree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you don't want me removing anything.
Yeah, no. That's always done by a pro. That's one qualified arborists and guys that know what they're doing climbing up there.
Yeah, and you also don't want the tree to go timber into the neighbor's yard.
Correct, because then that'll cost more than $1,200.
Yeah. So, but I was pleasantly surprised. And what do you recommend putting in there? I thought maybe a Starbucks. Where do you put, where the tree is?
Yeah. That coffee's a little too bitter for me. Maybe a different line of coffee.
But it is going to make take a big tree out like that, it changes the look of the front of the house.
Sure, especially evergreens because they spread out so much. And then the other issue you have is for years those needles have been on that soil, and you're going to have to do a little bit of abatement of all that needle. Your landscaper's going to have to come and literally dig down and get rid of a lot of that.
Okay.
Because it's going to be hard for stuff to grow back. Because they've been dropping those needles for years and years and years, so they're going to have to dig down a good 3 inches, pull all that soil out, put new topsoil down, and then depending on what you're going to do from a landscaping perspective, add it back in.
Front yard hot tub.
Love that.
What was I going to give the Pam? Oh, I have it right here. It's an April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone. It's brought to you by American Weather Makers, home of the 60 Minute Men. 855-955-HVAC. 630, are there any products Lou can push that won't kill me and the environment? I want to know right now.
Just in general?
Yes.
Seltzer water?
Okay, water. Seltzer water.
I mean, there's a whole slew of them.
Yeah, obviously Weisenheimer listener.
For gardening, there's this whole Dave Thompson's organic fertilizer, which is made from chicken poop. Mm-hmm. Which is all organic and really, really good stuff. Milorganite is another all-natural fertilizer.
Right. And that Milorganite is good on a sandwich.
Oh, my gosh. It's good. A little mayo. I like that sriracha mayo on top of that. It's delicious.
630, let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. 847, if your roof has some hail damage, will the bruised shingles get worse with time?
I mean, they won't get worse with time. The thing is, the hail damage, if there's a lot of the aggregate that came off of the shingles where you really can see the exposed underlayment underneath there, you really should get it replaced, even if it's just a few shingles, if you don't want to do the whole roof. Because, I mean, I guess the short answer is that exposure will erode the roof quicker. I mean, it isn't anything like, oh, my gosh, I need to replace it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But, in the next 12 months, I would.
815, we live on 2 acres. We have grubs in about 1 acre. What do we use?
At this point, you want a 24-hour kill grub treatment, and Bayer makes a product. You're going to need to buy a lot of bags of that to do an acre of land. And within 24 hours, it will kill all the grubs that are there. Now, the problem is they've probably done a lot of damage. Once that's done, you want to wait probably a couple weeks and then reseed that area to have it kind of grow in and get new root growth in there. And I would do that sooner than later so that it's ready for the fall.
708, Lou, did I leave my wallet at your house last night signed The Bear?
I saw it. I don't know how much money was left in it. It's empty now.
Okay. And finally from the 847, Lou, when Trump leaves the White House, will we use Fogu Mold or a different product to clean him out?
There's going to be a lot of cleaning products we're going to need there. Man. Good.
All right. We're going to have Anthony Scaramucci call you and curse on your cell phone while you're on TV here
wait.
In the next few minutes.
He's got a great head of hair.
Yes, he does. We'll be on TV on Channel 9. He's on the radio tomorrow right here, as he always is every Saturday.
Hey, actually, morning. Hometown Voices tomorrow, Steve, sponsored by Allstate. I'm down in Tinley Park at Parmesan Station. So if people want to come by, we'll be there from 7 to 10 in the morning.
Nicely done. Yeah. Good job. For a new guy, you're good.
Love you.
The Hall of Famer, I love you back. Sponsored by American Weathermakers. That's Lou Manfredini.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I spent 30 years of my life trying to get into the global elite so I could stand here and serve the president, and I missed the movement. So
what
here's what's going to happen.
Donald Trump is not
we're
elite.
Gonna, we're going to move on.
The business side or the politics side or the inheritance side, what part of Donald Trump? Many people
oh my
in
God,
the UK
so many,
don't understand
there's
that.
There's so many things about the
he's
president.
He's a celebrity.
How about
he's
the
a
cheeseburgers? How about the pizza that we're
eating? Everyone eats cheeseburgers and pizzas. What are you talking about?
That's the mooch. Anthony Scaramucci, Scaramucci, will you do the Fandango? Anthony Scaramucci, who has taken in his first week, he's not even officially in the administration yet. He doesn't have a security clearance. He hasn't peed in a cup. He hasn't had the test come back. He's not even official yet, and he's already started fires left and right. He gave an interview to The New Yorker and said, amongst other things, in regards to Reince Priebus, this is a guy who is the chief of staff. This is the guy that should be the gatekeeper for all things. But that's not how Trump runs things. He said about Reince Priebus, some brothers are like Cain and Abel, describing his relationship with Priebus. 150 years ago, people would have been hung for leaks like this. On eliminating leakers from the White House, he says, what I want to do is, and keep in mind, he knew he was on the record, and the reporter, the writer, called back the next day to make sure he knew he was on the record before they went to public or went to publish it. What I want to do, this is again, Scaramucci, what I want to do is effing kill all the leakers. On Reince Priebus, Scaramucci said, C blocked him for 6 months.
Right.
And if you need to know what C blocking is, ask your college age kid. He says, Reince is a effing paranoid schizophrenic, a paranoiac. On Steve Bannon, who he also works with in the inner White House. I'm not trying to, and this is the part I can't even say. Basically, he's describing a physical act that one would perform on themselves.
A man would perform on himself.
Or could if he was that flexible, I suppose. I don't know. He said, I'm not trying to build my own brand off the effing strength of the president. On the proof he's got on leakers so far on staff, he says, okay, the mooch showed up a week ago. Don't you love he refers to himself as the mooch?
Right.
The mooch showed up a week ago. This is going to get cleaned up very shortly, okay? Because I nailed these guys. I've got digital fingerprints on everything they've done through the FBI. He has no contact with the FBI. Mm-hmm. There's no one at the FBI would take someone who's not a government employee, let alone the communications director, and go, what evidence would you like? Let me send it over. And it goes on and on and on. Anyone would be fired in any normal White House for having this come out. And he's the communications director.
Completely. Throwing colleagues under the bus.
And creating even more chaos. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. Now, I'm told we have his cousin on the phone. I think this is right. Let me go there now. I'm sorry. I don't know your relationship to the mooch. Are you his cousin?
Yeah, I'm definitely his cousin.
Okay, and what is your name?
What is your name first? I don't get my name out till I find out who I'm talking to.
My name is Steve Cochran.
I know you. Yeah, yep. I can talk.
All right, okay, yeah. So
I'm Antonio.
You're Antonio.
Yeah, Antonio Scooch.
Oh, he's the Mooch, you're the Scooch.
Yeah, because I'm kind of big, and every time we get on the couch, they're like, hey, Antonio, could you scooch?
Scooch down.
Scooch down, move over, make some room.
Got it. All right, so he's the Mooch, you're the Scooch. What can you tell us about Scaramucci?
Nice. You know, we're a big family. You know, he's we don't really like him. I got to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I feel the same way. What is it you don't like about him?
Well, it's, you know, we have a reunion every year, right?
Right.
We got a big picnic that we do. We serve like sausage and beef.
Yeah. Right? What do you have there?
Sausage and beef.
Sausage and beef. All right. Yeah. It sounds delicious.
You never had no beef?
We've had beef. Sure, we've had beef.
You got to dip it in the gravy, man. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. So what happens at this family reunion?
Well, I get along with them okay, but it's some of the other cousins, like, you know, Nicky, Harry Knuckle, Scaramucci. He don't like them.
Nicky
gets all, yeah, he don't like them. Harry Knuckle.
All right. Well, who else shows up at these things?
Lorenzo, toss my cookies. Scaramucci, he don't like them.
Right, Bernardo.
blah, black sheep. Have you got any cash?
Right.
He hates them. His wife hates them. His wife hates him.
Yeah, I understand. And once your wife hates you, that's difficult. It makes it awkward.
Yeah, and she's a good-looking woman. You know, I got to admit, she's good-looking. Stephanie, soup on a stick, Scaramucci.
Soup on a stick.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of this seems to revolve around food.
Well, we're at a picnic.
Got it.
You know, but she's been on the side. She's been seeing Martino. Ain't anybody seen my keys, Scaramucci?
See? Well, that's unfortunate. That's got to make the whole family reunion awkward.
But the guy that's really mad at him right now is Donato, one potato, two potato. Oh, my God, I'm full. That guy.
Uh-huh.
That guy thinks that Anthony should stop doing what he's doing.
Well, the Mooch is in the White House. Do you have any advice for the president on how to deal with him?
Yeah, you know, I told Anthony, and I wasn't the only guy who did it. You know, I'll be honest with you. Salvador, Sunnyside Down, and Romolo, Row, Row, Row Your Boat. They all said the same thing, right? Right?
Yeah.
And because they told – Gino was the first one to say it. He goes, hey, Gino, chicken strips with hot sauce. He said to him, he goes, here's how you deal with him. You don't talk to him.
Don't talk to him at all.
You don't even go to the White House.
Right.
You stay outside. What is it? What's that street out there?
Pennsylvania
State
Avenue.
State Street.
No, it's Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah.
No, I'm talking in Washington, right outside the White House.
Yeah, okay, it's State Street. All right, so listen, I appreciate the insight. So, Mooch, not welcome at your next picnic.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I got to say hi from my other buddy. He's my best cousin. He loves your show, lives in Chicago. Iacomo, even when I'm not invited, Scaramucci.
Oh, he's the best. Hey, is he related to Tony Cannatuna Thomas?
Oh, definitely. I didn't know you knew him. He lives next to Giovanni Taco in a Bag.
I do know that. That's exactly right. Thank you. And what was your name again?
My name is Antonio Scooch Scaramucci.
That's right. The Scooch on the Mooch at 6:51. Traffic from Mary, and then a great Kid of the Week update in just a second on 720 WGN. Last week's Kid of the Year, Samantha Crump joins me. And yes, she's doing just fine, thank you. Hey, Kid of the Year, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Nice to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for having me on your show again.
Oh, thanks for being on. How you feeling?
Good.
Good? What's the doctor? What are the doctors telling you? You're all good?
Yep. I was just there yesterday, and everything's going good, so.
Are you still 17 or are you 18 now?
I'll be 18 on August 10th,
holy,
so a couple weeks.
Holy mackerel. Dave, what'd you get Samantha for her birthday?
You know, I haven't quite figured it out.
I'm still shopping.
I want to make sure it's the right thing for Samantha.
Let's just give her everything on the prize list today. Samantha is 17 years old. She's been dealing with a rare form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And while dealing with her own fight, she decided to help other kids with cancer and started making blankets for them and packing bags with stuff in them that would, cheer them up, keep them up. And July 8th was the one year anniversary when she was admitted into Lurie Children's. And July 14th, 1 year since she received her
stem cell transplant. So the nurses and the doctors say that's like another birthday for you.
Yep, that was my first birthday.
Yeah, how's it feel to be one? How's it feel to be one again?
Great.
I understand you just made a trip to Jamaica. What was the story there?
Well, that was where I wanted to go on my Make-A-Wish trip, because the main thing that I really wanted to do was swim with the dolphins, and I got to do that, and that was probably my favorite part of the trip.
How cool is that? Swimming with the dolphins.
Yeah.
Those dolphins were lucky to have you. What are you talking about? I understood you jumped off some cliffs, too?
Yeah, we did cliff jumping and tubing and zip lining. And we got to really see turtles back into the ocean. So it was there was so much to do, and it was so much fun.
Wow. Good for you. Now, your big 18th birthday is coming up here in just a couple of weeks. And then it's time to go off to college.
Yep.
Oh, what a summer for you. Where are you going to go?
I got into the nursing program at Illinois State, so that's where I'll be going.
This is a rare honor, Samantha. You're getting the sitting ovation from the Steve Cochran Show. Well, that's exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah, why, aren't you pumped up?
Yeah, I don't know about my mom, but
Your mom will be a mess. Oh, parents are always a mess when they send their kids off to school.
Yeah.
But you think about where things were and where things are now. God bless you. Boy, what a good story you are.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you know this, but everybody I know that you know in your life keeps telling me what a great person Samantha is. I go, yeah, I know. We know her. I met her. She's great.
Thank you.
We get it. We just wanted to update people. We got a real outpouring from folks when you were made Kid of the Year last year, and people wanted to get an update on you, and that's why we wanted to call. So I appreciate you getting up and stuff, but I couldn't be happier for you.
Well, thank you for having me back on your show. I really appreciate it.
Did you want to plug anything, like more charities that you're involved with, things that we should tell people about, advice for people on how to help folks today? Got anything else you want to throw in?
Well, Cal's Angels, they did. I just got back from Country Thunder. They gave me and my sister tickets, so I wanted to thank them.
They're an amazing group. I do their benefit every year, and Cal's Angels is it's another tremendous story. Cal was a little baseball playing kid, and he ends up with cancer, and he passed away, and his dad and stepmom pushed forward this foundation called Cal's Angels, and they raise an unbelievable amount of money. And they provide Christmas for the whole family, because a lot of times you can't concentrate on doing that type of thing. And it's spread out from there, and they're doing research dollars and stuff. It's a really good organization, Samantha, as you know.
It is a very good organization.
Cal's Angels. Hey, stay healthy and have fun at school.
Thank you very much.
Check in occasionally.
All right.
All right. Don't make us come down there and check on you. We'll do it.
Okay.
You know what she has to know also?
What's that?
Fear the bird.
Yeah, fear the bird. Remember, that's the slogan, fear the bird.
Fear the bird.
Oh, yes, of course.
Fear the bird. There you go.
Is she adorable?
She's
the
best.
Can I say she's adorable even though she's a teenager?
She's the best. She's 18. She'll be 18 in a couple weeks.
I know.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
714, Susana Mendoza, the state comptroller. At 7:40, Illinois Secretary of Education Beth Purvis is on yesterday. Said to Mendoza's office has funds they haven't released, which could be crucial for some of the poorer school districts and special needs kids and transportation and other costs. She says that's flat wrong, and she'll be on to explain why, amongst other things, in about 20 minutes or so. She was on with Roe yesterday, and here's a clip.
Where to start, Ro? Well, I can just tell you that, look, it's not correct. When it comes to her knowledge of school funding, you know, it's pretty clear that Governor Rauner's superstar education secretary, Dr. Purvis, I think needs to repeat kindergarten. Look, I'd love to be able to make the quarter three and the quarter four categorical school payments, but unfortunately, the controller cannot pay bills when the state's bank account is nearly empty, right? This is just common sense. It's not playing politics. It's more of an acknowledgement, frankly, that we can't write checks that can't be cashed. And just to give you an idea of where we're at today, our bank account has
$254 million in it. That's it. The bill backlog that is, you know, a result of Governor Rauner not having passed a budget for the last 2 years, he has been deficit spending under his administration at the tune of, just over the last 12 months, $600 million a month. So, you know, we have a $15 billion backlog that I've been able to pay some of that down now with some of these Medicaid dollars. I'm doing my best, but it's still almost $15 billion. And we only have $254 million in the account. There's two categorical payments that still have to be made. Both of them together total about $800 million plus.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't divide them up into like 10 or 20 smaller payments. They're two payments of $429 million each. I only have $254 million in the account. Just do the math. It's impossible to pay them, no matter how much I would love to. So it's, again, more misinformation, which is the status quo for this administration.
That's yesterday from Rocio. I will ask her about that. I will also ask her about the constant negativity. And is that her role as comptroller? What does she say about the Democrats and their piece of the story in the mess that the state is in? But primarily, I want to give her a chance to explain why that's wrong beyond what you just heard, and if there's a possibility to move any other monies around and make those Q3, Q4 payments. It does get a little deep in the weeds. And what it comes down to is this notion that comes out of Springfield that Mike Madigan is leading an effort to create a crisis where teachers and students and parents won't know if the schools are going to open on time, and therefore they will get the school funding that they want.
Right, and there are deadlines involved with this, too. They have to have it. Ronna wanted it done by July 31st. That's not going to happen, but they absolutely have to have their request in by August 10th because that's when all the money is approved.
And is it going to get pushed to the last minute again?
Right.
And, of course, who suffers in that? The people that are most vulnerable, and that's the kids and the parents and everything else. All right, Mary, do the traffic, and then I want to get to Adam Angieski, who is trying to keep an eye on all of Illinois' mess along with other states around the country. And we'll try to explain some of it, because you're not going to believe what some of the people around the states are making. No wonder we're broke. It is 7:21. Adam Angieski joins us now. Appreciate your patience, Adam. And Susana Mendoza coming up in a little bit on why there's no money left in Illinois and why it's all Rauner's fault. Good morning, Adam.
Well, hi, Steve. Thank you very much for your interest in our work. Happy to be on the program.
Yeah, I mentioned what your website is.
So it's openthebooks.com, and at openthebooks.com, our honorary chairman is former U.S. Senator Dr. Tom Coburn. We've been successful at the local, state, and federal levels capturing $4 billion individual expenditures from government at all levels.
And the point of Open the Books is around the country, state governments need to be more transparent and not in the BS cliched political way, but literally more transparent on how they're spending the tax dollars that you're sending in. And of course, you know, here in Illinois, Adam, the biggest problem we have is we're being asked to give more money to the most irresponsible state government in the country.
Well, that's right. Our mission is every dime online in real time. We want to capture and post so citizens can hold their government accountable for tax and spend decisions. And as you know, Steve, our number one manufactured product in Illinois is corruption. And if anything happens for the good of the people on public policy and politics, it's completely by accident.
It would be good if there was an app for that, you know, as opposed to the corruption factory that we're apparently living in.
Well, we actually have an app for that. It's been profiled on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal twice since 2013, and everybody can download. It's free for Apple and Android, the Open the Books app. We've got about 80,000 downloads of it, and everything we talk about today in terms of pay and out-of-control pay, everybody can see it all within their zip code or any zip code in Illinois just by downloading our free Open the Books app.
63,000 Illinois public employees earn more than $100,000 a year. I want you to let that sink in now. 63,000 Illinois employees have six-figure or better salaries in a state that's broke. How do you explain that?
Well, I think it's the biggest issue affecting reform on every issue at every level of government, right? I mean, excessive pay and pensions, this issue affects the delivery of education and health and human services and public safety and police and fire, everything it affects. The instances of waste in the system are, in Illinois, I think are legendary. We expose it all in this Forbes column.
The Park Forest School District Superintendent. Look, being a school superintendent has got to be one of your more difficult jobs. I grant you that. It's got to be extremely difficult. But anybody that gets into education with the idea of being, well, this is how I'm going to get rich, come to Illinois. Because the Park Forest School District Superintendent makes almost $400,000 a year. The Calumet City School District Super makes almost $400,000 a year, as does the Indian Springs School District Super as well. There's 10,676 rank-and-file workers and managers in Chicago that work in or around or for Mayor Emanuel who are well over six figures. And I think we all know that the aldermen have gotten rich for years.
Yes.
And by the way, that's the stuff we know they make.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also want to point out a specific instance that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. But down in Ford Heights, and this is one of the most economically depressed areas in the state, and if you live in Ford Heights, 96% of the students qualify for public aid. Only 19% of the students tested as ready for the next level on the standardized test. But what is their superintendent, Gregory Jackson's salary? $325,000.
It's ridiculous.
This is a moral outrage.
Just absolutely ridiculous. And they're protected. All of these salaries are protected. And then there's pension arguments to be made on the back end of it as well.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we at OpenTheBooks.com, we showed that there are 30,000 Illinois educators that have a income of over $30,000. But roughly only 20,000 of them are actually currently employed. The rest are retired on six-figure pensions.
Adam, this is concerning as well. The top 10 village managers make an excess of $230,000 apiece. How is that possible when so many, especially I know in the south suburbs and in Will County and as you get further downstate, they're part-time jobs as well? Or the mayor or the village manager has a real job,
if there's only so much work.
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
these
are little towns.
It used to be almost like a stipend, right? Like 20 grand or whatever it would be. Now it's well over six figures.
That's right. So we point out that there are village and city managers and administrators across the state, 84 of them, that out-earn every governor of the 50 states at $180,000. They out-earn what would be the salary of Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner if he was taking a salary. Specifically, Michael Ellis in Grays Lake. Grays Lake was just in the national news because of the flooding.
Right.
It's a population of 20,000 people, and Michael Ellis last year made $265,000 in Grays Lake.
Yeah, it's the numbers are insane. $250,000-plus for Kevin Bowens in Libertyville, and on and on and on. And for you people who live in these small towns, I assume you know how much your city managers are making, but what are you paying them that amount of money for?
And specifically, you know, the superintendents managing the school districts, we found that 4 out of 5 of the most highly compensated Illinois educators were in the south suburbs, not even the North Shore. So that's, you know, in line with the Ford Heights and in line with the Park Forest superintendent. The Park Forest superintendent, Joyce Carmine, she actually has a quadruple in pay. Up to $400,000 since the year 2000.
It's just double, triple, quadruple dipping.
I think that's why, and Adam, you probably found this too. The mayor of Orland Park's salary would have, I think, quintupled had he won, and then he was defeated. Longtime mayor of Orland Park, Dan McLaughlin, was defeated last year because of that. I guess my question to you is: can this be changed? Can you go back and basically say, all right, here's going to be the new mayor's salary?
Well, I feel bad for Rahm. Rahm's unbelievably underpaid.
Oh,
Rahm's
yeah.
making, what, a little north of 200 grand? He had to go manage a little town up north.
But how difficult is it for some of these smaller towns and villages to say, you know what, we're just going to take the money away now?
Well, I think it certainly can be done. I think it starts with people being engaged at the local level. This is an outrage.
Engaged and enraged.
Absolutely. They need to use our data, come to openthebooks.com, use our data, start asking questions, demand answers, network your friends and family into those public meetings, and hold the local politicians accountable for their tax and spend decisions. I mean, specifically in the city of Chicago, we found Rahm Emanuel, city of Chicago, so mismanaged that last year the city paid out $283 million in overtime, and that included 1,000 employees that received over $40,000 apiece in overtime.
Think about that. These are city employees, 1,000 or more, who made 40 grand just in overtime, each of them.
So you've got deputy police chiefs. And look, the police and fire in the city of Chicago, they are overwhelmed by the amount of by the sheer amount of work they have to do. So I don't blame the police and fire. I blame the people running these systems, Rahm Emanuel, the commissioner, Eddie Johnson. Eddie Johnson was out-earned by a deputy police chief because the deputy made $146,000 in overtime on top of his $94,000 salary.
And if you're not managing overtime, what are you doing? That should be part of your job as being a good manager of any business. You manage the costs.
You just don't have enough rank-and-file employees on the payroll. I mean, when you're paying out $150,000 of OT, there's something wrong. Look, we've got a police communications operator, and she pulled down...
What is that, like a dispatcher?
We believe it is, yes.
And how much did you make?
$121,000 in OT.
It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
She made almost $200,000 last year total.
It's all on your website. Again, openthebooks.com, right?
It is.
We need to spend more time with this, Adam. We need you to come in and go over some of this stuff live with us when possible. But I want people to go to the website, openthebooks.com, poke around, because knowledge is power. And the more you know, the more questions you'll ask, and the better of a citizen you're going to be when you go vote.
And I also want to point out, we're up at Forbes. Our piece at Forbes has gotten almost 250,000 views. Yep. Just Google Forbes, Adam. Illinois.
I appreciate your time, Adam. Thank you very much. Susana Mendoza, the state comptroller. Get the bills, pay the bills, write the checks. But what else does she think is included in the job? It's a question I want to ask her when she comes on in about 10 minutes, because she's been very political. It's 7:30. Before we go any further, let's do this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
State Comptroller Susana Mendoza standing by. I want to play the clip from yesterday's show. This is Illinois Education Secretary Beth Purvis. And Beth Purvis yesterday made the statement that there were Q3 and Q4 payments that the Comptroller's Office could make, but are not making. And then we'll give Mendoza an opportunity to say why that's just flat wrong. First, here's Purvis from yesterday.
The comptroller has not yet released the Q3 and Q4, what are called mandatory categorical payments. So schools are owed about $850 million from FY17. And so we also call on the comptroller to release at least those Q3 dollars so that schools have the cash on hand that they need. Again, Q3 and Q4 is $850 million that districts across the state are owed for their mandated categorical payments. A lot of them have burned through their cash reserves. So this cash flow issue is a really big one.
And this is a cash flow that, in a lot of ways, as I understand it, targeted towards some really struggling financially struggling districts, and also some special needs districts as well, or not districts that have a preponderance of special needs kids. At any rate, Susana Mendoza is the state comptroller. I appreciate you coming on. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Now explain to me, because you deal with this at a level we don't, and keep this simple now, because we're simple.
Sure.
What are these categorical payments, and why is Purvis wrong in what she said?
So the categorical payments are separate from the general state aid payments, which is what you're hearing a lot of discussion about now with Senate Bill 1. The categorical payments are in a separate pool. They're not considered core mandated payments by either state statute or court orders. So they would fall into the pool that gets in the queue along with all the other bills that are already late. Now, keep in mind, in case you don't know or your audience doesn't know, this is not like we just have a small pile of bills. We have almost $15 billion in bills for services that have already been rendered from schools, from social service providers, you name it, hospitals. And we only have on any given day, you know, a few hundred million dollars in the bank account to try to cover paying back over $15 billion worth of bills. Categoricals fall into that category. And just so folks know, we are up to date on paying bills through, this is going to make you cry, but through the month, we're in the month of October. So if you have been owed money from last October, so 2016, that's as far as we are current. Categoricals, on the other hand, are a little bit more current, because when I took office in December, December, January, February is the absolute worst month for revenue in the state of Illinois. So we were in triage mode every day. But then in the month of April, was the first month that we had any significant amount of revenues coming in because it was tax month, right? So that was a really great sure. month revenue-wise. And that's when I was able to prioritize getting out the first categorical payment, which is not a small payment. It's a $429 million payment that pretty much goes out at once because it goes to all the schools in an equal way. And it's not easy to cobble up $429 million to make a payment. For example, just yesterday we woke up with $254 million liquid, but we had a $220 million payment to make towards our debt service. So there's just not enough money in the account. And anybody who understands the most basic rule, which is that you can't write a check that you know is going to bounce, would understand that as much as I would absolutely love to get that categorical funding up for quarter three and quarter four, it's just impossible to do when there's not enough money in the bank account to cash those checks.
Susanna, you said the money was in some kind of a queue. First of all, my question, does that make any, or could that be put somewhere where it makes extra interest or makes extra money on itself? And could we use that to pay off the bills? And why would Beth Purvis think that there's extra money in that queue that could be released?
Well, maybe I shouldn't have used the word queue. By queue, I mean a line of people waiting to get paid, not an actual account that has money in it. So no, there is no, it's not like the $429 million are going into a fund. We don't have the $429 million. So for Secretary Purvis to have gone on your show and said that I should release these dollars, it's absolutely disingenuous. She could just go to our website and see how much money we have available on a daily basis, or she could have just called and said, hey, can you release categorical funding? And I would have said, well, I'd love to, Director Purvis, but we don't have the money. So, no, we can't do that. Again, it's just this misinformation campaign that is you know, par for the course with this administration, and it doesn't help. You know, if they really want to make sure that schools open up on time, then I need the money to be able to pay the schools.
Well, what about, I mean, look, in your position, and I don't envy your position, in your position, you got to get creative every day to try to juggle as much as you can to pay what you have to pay. If we know that approximately 85% is legally mandated bills that we have to pay, that's going to suck up the vast majority, 90%, the vast majority of the revenue. But is there nothing creatively that you can do, and I mean this in a legal way, juggling the books sure. to make these school payments? Is there any money that can be moved? Is there any creative thing that could be done? Anything at all?
Steve, with all due respect, it's not magic, right? Like, there's. No
well, I'm not asking for magic. I'm just saying. I know that in conversations through the years with Hines and with Judy Barr. And with your predecessor, Leslie Munger, and it's not this number. This is a very big number, but at different times you got to juggle and you got to change positions in the line. I'm asking you if there's anything that could be done, and you're telling me no, there's not, right?
Well, I would tell you that I already have done that. So what I started saying was that I prioritized quarter one and quarter two categoricals, which had not been paid by my predecessor. That was over $800 million. And I paid that in April, and then I paid it again in June. In June, I can guarantee you most of the superintendents, if not all of them across the state, had no idea they were going to be getting the June categoricals because they probably saw that as a lost cause. But I made it a priority to get them their money. You didn't hear any fanfare about it. I didn't have a press conference or a press release saying that I'm paying the school categoricals. I wanted to just get these folks their money, knowing that that might be the last month given the revenue projections for the rest of the year. And you heard me probably on my video saying that if we didn't pass a budget in August, we were going to miss debts. We were going to miss pension payments and potentially payrolls. And it would be absolutely devastating for our state.
So
no joke. We're doing magic every day in the controller's office, but there's only so much we can do. And a $429 million payment, of which we actually have two, is impossible to do when you have $200 million in the bank.
Right. Now, to open the schools on time, the money's got to be there. You know the rumor that's out there. The rumor that's out there is that the Democrats are trying to slow this down to create a crisis right up to the last minute to have some sort of negotiating strength to get this through. Why can't, and the reason I ask you this is because you're part of the political process here and you've been very outspoken about it. Why can't this bill get to the governor's desk to let the governor go ahead with the amendatory veto and then kick it back to the legislators and let the assembly decide what they're going to do with it then? What are they waiting for?
Well, I think they should send it. So I think you and I can agree on that. They should send it. You know, from my perspective, go ahead, put this on the governor, let him make his amendatory veto, or the preferable thing would be for him to sign it and to, frankly, just be honest with the public as to what the bill does. It is not a bailout, as he likes to call it. This is not a bill that should be dividing one part of the state against another, or some people's kids versus others.
First off, watch out for that train. That train, I'm afraid that train may have been sent by the governor. Watch out for that train.
You're so funny. Yeah, it's loud. It sure is. But in any event, this has become such a political thing when it shouldn't be. You know, what this bill does is provide parity to every single school district across the state. And, you know, I'm still here in central Illinois, I should say.
Right.
I was in Gillespie last night and met with three different superintendents, all of whom represent central Illinois. It's, you know, very far from they're not going to be defenders of Chicago. Yet they were saying this bill, we've been working on it for 4 years. This is not a bill that was crafted even by politicians. It's a bill that was crafted by educators who've dedicated their life to educating kids, right? And they just want to be able to make sure that every school district gets treated the same way, that, you know, theirs isn't on a more advantageous level than a district up north. And this is about fairness.
Well, but that's what we were just talking about. That's, you know, we were just talking about this. But we're both on.
I'm going to say he shouldn't veto it. He should sign it.
Well, but I understand you feel that way, but we both know he's going to. My point is, let's get on with the process. This is the same nonsense that just went on in Congress with the health care bill. Move the ball. Move it along, because school's coming.
I think we agree. We agree with that.
All right. Now, here's the other question, though, I have for you. I want to give you as much time as possible, but I have to get a bunch of questions in here. Here's the other question I have for you. Has any Democrat in leadership or related to leadership asked you to slow pay anything?
Oh, my God, no. No way. And if they did, I'd just tell them to go stick it. Of course not.
Okay.
My job is to make sure that I'm managing the state's finances as best as possible. And look, nobody tells me what to do. Well, hold on. One person tells me what to do, and that's my mom. She's 81, and you would listen to her if she told you what to do. She's, you know, small but feisty.
I listen to all moms.
Where I get my feistiness from, but, you know, that's it. I'm here because the voters elected me to be here, and that's who I have to be accountable to.
I'm not questioning your integrity. I'm questioning their integrity. I'm asking if anyone reached out and asked you to, and I got your answer. Your answer is no. However, the politics of this, I don't understand your overall position with the politics of this. You've been incredibly critical of this governor, and you're certainly entitled to that opinion. But some of these quotes are pretty extreme. And I know he's taken shots at you as well. And I don't understand it on either end. The governor's not without fault in this. He definitely has fault in this process. But he wasn't the guy that's been there for the last 20 or 30 years leading up to this. He wasn't the guy in 96 when this whole pension thing kicked in. And he and Madigan seem to have made it personal. But it feels like it's personal between you and the governor. So are you the comptroller for the state of Illinois or for the Democrats?
I'm the comptroller for the state of Illinois. And as a matter of fact, I'm glad you asked that, because if you can name one other Republican elected leader here in this state that I've critiqued, then I'll just shut up. But you can't, because my issue is not that I'm against Governor Rauner because I'm playing politics or I'm supporting Democrats. I have no problem with the fact that he's a Republican. That's not why I'm critiquing him. I'm critiquing him because he's, in my opinion, now this is my opinion, the worst governor that we've had in my lifetime. And those are some important words to be saying, because let me tell you, I led the impeachment efforts against my own governor, a Democrat, Governor Blagojevich. And, you know, don't take my word for it. Look up my record. You'll see my name front and center on the ability to create the panel to even impeach the governor. And I was very outspoken, and I had just as strong words about Rob Blagojevich as I do today for Governor Rauner. That's not my opinion. Look it up. You'll see my.
But Governor Blagojevich is sitting in prison, so I want to make sure I understand what you just said. You're telling me that Governor Rauner is a worse governor than Blagojevich was for the state of Illinois.
Yes, in terms of Governor Blagojevich did not rack up a $15 billion bill backlog and $800 million in late payment interest penalties. We never teetered on the brink of not allowing our school systems to open. As a matter of fact,
well, that's not true. That's not true. Now, listen.
Hold on a second here. Here's what's true, because I'm the controller and I can verify that, in fact, this will be the first time in at least the last 30 years, if not ever in the history of this state, that the state of Illinois controller will be unable to make general state aid payments to schools. That falls on this governor. And it's fair, because when he ran for governor, he critiqued Governor Quinn on his lack of leadership. And so what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
But is there anything...
And that's what they are.
But Comptroller, is there anything the Democrats could do better? Is there anything Mike Madigan could do? Is there anything John Cullerton could do? Is there anything the assembly on the Democrat side, the people that vastly control this state, is there anything they could do better? How is this all Rauner's fault?
No, this is not all Rauner's fault. Let me be clear about that again. And I've said this on many occasions. The governor did not create the problems that existed when he took office. I can't blame a single one of them on him, right? He was just a regular citizen. But the minute he got elected, it was his job to lead the state and help fix the problems that he promised he was going to fix. Instead of what was a $5 billion backlog that should have been paid down, we have a $15 billion backlog, a 200% increase under his tenure. Deficit spending by a fiscal conservative of $7.2 billion a year more than we had coming in. How is that fiscally responsible? That wasn't Governor Quinn. It wasn't Mike Madigan or John Cullerton. That was the governor and his state agencies that he controls. So, you know, he has to take responsibility for what's happened under his watch. And I think that the Democrats can absolutely do a lot of things better, and we need to. We're going to need to deal with issues of reform. That's, you know, the situation that we're in right now is unsustainable. But the relationships that exist at this moment are so toxic that any thought that we can negotiate on things of serious reform is just out the window at this point.
Okay, but how are you making – but Susanna, how are you making it less toxic when you say things like – and these are your words, not mine. Yeah. When you say things like the Michelangelo quote, if creating havoc for the state of Illinois was a form of art, Governor Bruce Rauner would be Michelangelo. How does that help?
Well, I just think I'm being a truth. I'm being truthful about what's happening in the state.
But so you just said
the most important bill.
Let me make the point, please.
In 30 years.
The point is, you just said you're the comptroller for the state of Illinois. Somebody's got to be the grown up in the room. Shouldn't you be the person that's not shooting at the governor? Shouldn't you take the higher road?
I guess I'm going to defend myself, though. You know, when his education secretary, per his direction, goes on your show and makes a wildly false allegation, then, yeah, I think he is creating havoc. Maybe it should start with the governor leading and acting like the adult that he's supposed to be, right? So I'm not going to sit there and allow them to just make up misinformation and spread it to the public as if it were true.
So you think...
Judy Bartzepinka, let me just say this. Judy Bartzepinka,
I have a question.
Late, but great one. She criticized Governor Blagojevich when he made, you know, crazy decisions on behalf of the state that would impact our finances. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing it. I'm calling him out for it. I know he doesn't like it. But if he just did his job, maybe I would be a great cheerleader for the governor.
Dan Hines, Judy Bartzepinka, and even your predecessor, because Munger did it on this show, called out both sides. I've never heard you call out the Democrats until today. Not one time.
Well, I just did. Well, you know, again, in all fairness, I had never really truly been invited to your show.
That's absolutely not true. No, then you need to talk to your people. Now, that's well. Listen, you think Beth Purvis was not telling the truth? Your people aren't telling you the truth. You've been invited on this show. You've been invited on this show with regularity, and you're invited back. And again, I thank you for coming on because this access is important for people to hear. All I'm saying to you as a taxpaying citizen for Illinois, not as a talk show host, think about the words you're using as well. The governor, and I've said this to the governor. I'll say it to him again. The governor. Your office, Madigan's office, everybody needs to grow up and think about the people of this state and do the right thing, because this pissing contest that goes on isn't helping anybody.
Well, I think that's good advice, Steve. I do. I so want you to know that from my perspective, I am not going to be, and I don't think I was elected to be, just some bureaucrat that sits behind the desk and keeps quiet while the state is crumbling around us. I'm going to speak up about that, and I'm going to use the language that I feel is necessary to make sure that people are paying attention to what's happening to their state. And some people are going to like that, and some people are going to hate it. But at the end of the day, I know that my commitment is to try to be the best controller that the state's ever had so that I can be the truth-telling fiscal watchdog of what's happening. That's what I said I'd do in the campaign. It's exactly what I'm doing right now. And I know it ruffles some feathers, but at least I'm being truthful with the people, and I'm not going to go on your show and make up some phony baloney allegation that she could immediately just discount by communicating. You know, it's a two-way street. Communication is a two-way street.
I agree with that, and I appreciate your honesty, and I appreciate you coming on. So let's do this again, and let's keep the conversation going, and I appreciate you listening to the advice. But thank you for coming on.
Hey, by the way, Steve, before you hang up on me,
I would never hang up on you.
Thank you. Well, just because you have other more important things to do, but One of my best friends, Andy Hansen, is like an avid listener of yours, and for years he's been saying, you should go to Steve Cochran show. But in any event, in case he's listening, hey, buddy.
All right. Well, well done on the shout out. That was very well done, I have to say. She slipped that in nicely.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than when I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
8:13, let's go live to Channel 9, where Dean Richards is standing by.
Here I am.
Hi, Dean.
Good morning. Happy Friday
Hi, Dean.
To you.
Hi, how are you?
Happy Friday. Hello.
There he is, Dean
Hello.
Richards.
Woo.
Dean, let me share a couple of texts with you.
Can you hear me?
Dean, let me share a couple of texts with you from the listeners. Okay. And I know this won't surprise you. This is on the Susana Mendoza interview that was just on.
Huh.
Steve, well done. Steve, nice job pushing back. She's as partisan as they come. Steve, nothing wrong with hard questions, but you're rude.
Duh.
Is that your
Duh.
Mom again? You hate when your mom texts.
Steve, not much longer with you, as his treatment of Mendoza is biased. Steve, will you give Purvis a chance to refute the fact the controller called her a liar? Yes, she's absolutely welcome back if she'd like to address it, without a doubt. Steve, this conversation proves nobody in the power in the state of Illinois cares about the citizens of Illinois. Steve, stop being a bully. Just because you're a talk show host doesn't give you the right to attack a guest on your show. That is the talk show host mantra. That's why you're a talk
attack,
show host.
Attack, attack, attack.
Attack a guest. That's the way I attack Dean all the time.
Hey, in all fairness, you attack us sometimes.
And I,
yeah, I don't understand why. I mean, I get texts and emails.
Well, I got one more for you first. Steve 630. Yeah. Interview some more. I find you fair. Whether Democrat or Republican, it's clear to me you're attempting to hold our elected officials accountable.
Absolutely.
Nice job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is what the talk show host should do. Ask challenging questions. It's not rude or mean
no.
or mean-spirited.
And by the way, it's not wrong to interrupt a guest when they go on and on and on, as all politicians are trained to do.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a technique. It's called running out the clock,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they know that there's only so many minutes, and if they just keep talking. I didn't hear the interview, so I don't know.
Well,
exactly
I listen.
Happened, but,
I'll give
but,
her.
But that's what happens. They try to run the
right,
clock out,
right,
and
right.
sometimes, as the host, you have to interject in order to cover some other things that need to be covered.
Yeah, because there's only so much time. I will give her credit for this, because I called her out on the carpet for being incredibly negative and taking shots at the governor. And you're not making it better, you're making it worse. And I asked if she was comptroller for the Democrats or for the state of Illinois. She said the state of Illinois. And I said, well, then somebody's got to be the grown-up in the room. Why can't it be you? All of those things. But I will give her credit to, not just for coming on, because I certainly give her credit for that, but also for saying she's going to be her. She's going to be, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to say some things. And if people don't like it, tough. That's essentially the message.
There you go.
So,
you're so rude.
That's me, rude talk show host Steve. Steve, you're rude.
She was sitting right in front of me at Cirque du Soleil's opening the other night. She and her husband, very nice. Both very nice.
I hear she's a nice person. We got off on the wrong foot in a huge way. I'd have her back. I'd absolutely have her back. And again, Beth Purvis is welcome to refute what was just said. But there won't be any guest versus guest screaming like you see on talk TV every night. That's not going to happen. By the way, I don't know how much CNN you see, Dean, but have you noticed, and this is from a TV perspective, Anderson Cooper in particular, but many of the shows now, they have panels with over 10,000 people on them.
Right.
By the time Anderson yeah. Cooper gets done introducing the panel,
the segment's over.
Segment's over.
Right.
Show's done.
Yeah, there's too much screen. There is. I don't understand the point of. I mean, I get the point counterpoint. You have somebody from both sides representing the views, but when it's just shouting at each other, nothing's accomplished. You know, there's the point should be we want to represent, we want to put all the ideas out on the table and let people decide what they want, not this mean, nasty name calling. It is completely out of context.
Yeah, and it doesn't help in any way, shape, or form. So
I would like to see you with your guests before they come on the show. This, you know, might defuse some of this. You know, you go on the Ferris wheel together. You're trapped on the Ferris wheel. You know, you gotta
You're talking about the new one over here at the pier, the tall one.
Yeah. At the pier, you go for ice cream.
It's a good idea.
Walk by the bean, arm in arm. Yeah.
And maybe set it to the courtship of Eddie's father. Yeah. People, let me tell you about my best friend. Yeah, I think it'd be good.
Steve, you are a one-man cuddly toy. My up, my down, my pride and joy.
Oh, if I had a nickel for every time I've heard that. Dean has the information as follows. He's got the top paid stand-up comedians. There's a second.
If Steve's on that list.
I'm pretty sure I'm not. Second City is going to honor a former Cheers star. Larry David is in the news. And a bunch of movie reviews, because there's a couple of good ones coming out this weekend, including one where a famous legendary actor plays poop.
Yep.
So there you go. At 8:18, let's do traffic, and we'll come back with Dean. You feeling good, by the way? You sound like you're coming back.
I am feeling good. You want to check my pulse?
There'll be a full checkup, including that check for your hernia, in just a moment.
That's what I was hoping.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, channel 972.
Follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show. A bunch of tweets coming in on the Mendoza interview, as well as we return with Dean Richards live from Channel 9.
What are some of them saying?
Well, this is the type of thing, and I think you're the same way. I don't mind any criticism at all, if it's, you know, not a personal attack. And, you know, I don't think anybody should do that. But when you get something like this, it makes you feel good. Pamela Wart, enjoyed your interview with the comptroller, and I am a lifelong Democrat. Keep holding the politicians accountable for words and actions. That's a tweet and a bunch of text messages as well. I'll try to get to a bunch more of those at 312-981-7200. We hope to get back to Potty Mouth Scaramucci, Lil Trump, L-I-L apostrophe, Lil Trump. He is the incoming communications director who did an on-the-record interview with a contributor to CNN and a writer for The New Yorker, and dropped the phrases sea sucker and multiple F-bombs over and over and over again because he's a genius like that, as the Six Flags Over Stupid continues in Washington.
Six Flags Over Stupid, you say?
it's unbelievable.
Oh, I want to go on the water slide right on there, that yeah. Amusement park.
It's broken halfway down. All right, so top paid stand-up comedians. Give me, what do you got, top five, top ten?
I have ten.
All right, give me the ten, starting with ten.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah, he had a great tour. Got a lot of Chicago history. I'm guessing he probably made...
It's from Arlington Heights.
Probably made $2 million last year.
$15 million
wow.
Last year.
Wow.
Jeff Dunham is number nine.
Jeff Dunham's a dude with a puppet?
Correct.
Yeah. The puppet made $20 million. Jeff made $37.50.
Actually, the total was $15.5 million.
Okay, next.
Terry Fader?
Oh, this is the guy that won the first America's Got Talent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You had him on.
Yeah, and I think he's is he an impressionist? I think he does impressions.
I'm not sure.
He does a Vegas showcase show only. Kids, get to Vegas, get yourself a casino or a hotel showroom, and start backing the money truck up. I'm guessing he made $17
million. $18.5 million.
Not bad.
Number eight. Number seven, our old pal Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, Gaffigan had a big year.
Gaffigan breaks the top ten.
What do you get?
$30.5 million.
Wow!
That's a lot of hot pockets.
That is a lot of hot pockets. He can afford those 28 kids now.
That's exactly right. He needs to. He's the only one on the list that actually needs to make that much money.
Yeah, he's off the cheese. What's next?
Kevin Hart is number six with $32.5 million.
He's a mogul. He's just got everything going on. Next.
Amy Schumer, $37.5 million.
Really an acquired taste.
Number four is Dave Chappelle, $47 million this year.
What did Chappelle do to make $47 million?
He had a net. He didn't need to do a Netflix
show. Oh, he did
two
Netflix specials.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Boy, that's a lot.
Maybe.
Of money. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Of money.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. is number three, $52 million.
And he does a really smart thing. He's a whack job, but he does a really smart thing where he puts his specials out. It's like self publishing. He'll put his specials out and he'll go $5. And if you want to share them with somebody, what am I going to do? I hope you don't. But if you do, he charges you $5 to see it. Pretty smart.
That is smart. Number two is Chris Rock at $57 million.
Still one of the funniest guys out there, even though he's got 15 writers. And
who do you think would be the number one guy?
Lucille Ball.
Wow. You are a target.
I don't know. Who's number one?
Jerry Seinfeld, $69 million.
Still?
And he did a big tour.
And, oh, that's right.
Yeah, did a big
tour.
He's
got that show, the
comedians in cars making pastries making, that day.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. Top eight comedians. Cheer Star coming to be honored at Second City.
George Wendt.
Ah, of course.
Is going to be honored at Second City. It's actually going to be a roast among those.
George will eat it.
Roasting. George thinks it's roast beef. He was confused. Among those roasting him will be Jason Sudeikis from SNL, who is his nephew, by
That's
the way.
Right. That's yeah. right. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Bob Odenkirk's going to come in and be a roaster. Betty Thomas, David Koechner, among many others. It's going to be September 9th at Second City Main Stage. Proceeds are going to go to Gilda's Club and the Second City Alumni Fund. Now, here's the rub. Tickets are going to start at $1,000 a piece for
this. Are you kidding?
$1,000.
What's the charity?
To $3,000. Gilda's Club.
Gilda's Club. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Good for Gilda's Club.
It's a good cause.
You remember the greatest George Wendt line from Cheers? Norm walks into the bar, and Woody, as the bartender, goes, "Hey, Norm, what's shaking?" He goes, "All four cheeks and one of my chins."
That's a great line.
Genius. Genius writing on that show.
What's coming to Hulu?
Do you remember the shows that used to be on primetime on Friday night? They called it the TGIF.
Wasn't that Urkel night?
I think Urkel was part of that. It was Family Matters is Urkel, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Full House probably, right?
Full House was part of it. Perfect Strangers, Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Perfect Strangers. That was Belky and...
Cousin Larry.
And his Cousin Larry.
Cousin Larry, yeah.
What happened to Bronson Pinchot? Wasn't he a big deal for a while?
He was, I guess. I mean, shortly after the show went off the air. I have no idea what
he's bring him out right now, Bronson Pinchot, working at Starbucks across the street.
Barista.
The full lineup of all of these shows, every episode, going to be available on Hulu starting on September the 29th.
Wow. Hulu, Netflix. I mean, you know.
It's what all the kids are watching, Steve.
Thank God Channel 9's still there and CLTV. By the way, good ratings on the CLTV show. I forgot to tell you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. So, nice job.
What's not to love?
CLTV will be joining us and we them in about a half hour. What's the Larry David story?
Larry David, who famously impersonated Bernie Sanders on SNL last year.
Brilliantly.
During the campaign. Turns out that Larry David is actually related to Bernie Sanders. They did one of those.
Come on!
One of those PBS Finding Your Roots shows. And it turns out that Larry David.
How could he be my cousin?
Is he? Is like third cousin to.
Oh, that's funny.
The Vermont senator.
That's funny. All right, movie reviews for the weekend.
Loved Detroit. Loved Detroit. This is one of those super hard to watch movies. It reminded me of 12 Years a Slave, that one, where it's really hard to watch this movie, but it's powerful. It's important. It's so well done. It's about an incident that took place 50 years ago this week, as a matter of fact, in Detroit, when an after-hours party was raided by the police. The African-American people who were at this party felt like that they were abused by the police and felt like it was just really the straw that broke the camel's back of what they considered to be a police misconduct. And a huge race riots broke out in Detroit, burning quite a bit of the city down. So this movie is about that, what brought this on, and what happened during the race riots, including one incident in particular at the famous Algiers Hotel, where several people who were staying at the hotel were severely beaten. Three of them were killed because of rampant, rampant, horrible, violent racism that took place. This is a great, powerful movie, not only about the events from 50 years ago, but how this movie subtly reminds you that many these kinds of things occasionally still go on in America. There are no huge stars in this movie. John Boyega from Star Wars is in it, who played Finn. Jason Mitchell is in it, who was in Straight Out of Compton. Catherine Bigelow directs this movie, though, from The Hurt Locker. She won an Oscar for directing The Hurt Locker.
She's great.
She's an amazing director. Shoots it kind of like a documentary. Highly recommended. Dean's List A. But
I've been looking forward to that one.
Yeah, again, not an easy movie to watch.
I thought you'd go see Atomic Blonde.
That Well, that too.
You but, will go. I know you
yeah.
will go see that.
Oh, for sure.
This one continues the trend this summer of girl power at
yeah.
the movies. Charlize Theron, a British MI6 agent who was assigned to bust up a Russian espionage group in Berlin just before the Berlin Wall falls down. Plotline of this movie isn't nearly as important as what Charlize Theron brings to this role. It's a fairly routine action spy movie. It reminded me not so much of James Bond as a lot of people are saying, oh, she's the female James Bond. I didn't get that at all. This is more like Jason Bourne or John Wick. It's one of these really gritty, she nonstop kicks butt in this movie. And that's really what elevates the movie. I wound up giving it a Dean's List B.
Is this a franchise for her?
I think they are leaning that direction. Yes.
Okay. And finally, the Emoji Movie.
Yeah. One of the greatest cinema tour de forces.
Of all the actors that have played poop, is this your favorite?
of the many actors, I remember Sir John Gielgud
sure.
Did a tremendous poop at the Bard in London. And I remember Spencer Tracy and Catherine Hepburn in Poop's Rib.
Who doesn't?
Did Meryl Streep ever venture into that, Dean?
She never got into the poop genre.
She could have.
Genre.
She could have.
You know, she may still. This time it is Sir Patrick Stewart, who we know from Star Trek, who we know he's a three-time Laurence Olivier Award winner, Royal Shakespearean trained.
Who else could play poop?
Playing the poop emoji in this movie. This movie is about the emojis that live in your phone and the hijinks that go on with them. It's actually kind of funny. What I found most interesting about this movie, it's the first movie that I can think of that is completely and totally for the smartphone-obsessed generation, which are your kids who live in their phones. I think that they're really going to love this movie. And I got to say, I laughed quite a bit. There are a lot of poop jokes in this movie. If you're a 12-year-old boy, you know, with that kind of sense of humor, you're going to laugh a lot at, you know, these kinds of movies.
Yeah, and Daniel Day-Lewis was going to play the role, but he's a method actor, and nobody wanted to see that.
It was messy.
It'd be awful.
It was very messy.
Before we let you go, favorite George Wendt moment from Cheers from a listener? It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
I was trying to think of the line. That was my favorite
That's
one.
That's pretty funny.
That's a good one.
You on the radio Sunday?
Sunday with my interview with Sir Patrick Stewart. Yes, we've got the exclusive interview with the poop emoji. Sunday morning. Take that, James Lipton.
It's Match Game 78. Who were the originals? It was Brett Summers.
Brett Summers, Charles Nelson Reilly.
Right. Richard Dawson.
Richard Dawson.
Nipsey Russell.
J.P. Morgan.
And then she ended up on the Gong Show.
Right.
By the way, the new Gong Show sucks.
What about Fannie Flagg?
Fannie Flagg was on there.
Betty White was on there, too.
Oh, yeah. Remember what Fannie Flagg did? She wrote a great movie. Fried Green Tomatoes. You know, Fannie Flagg wrote
that. Oh, that's right.
She did? What else did she do?
That's it. She opened up Fannie Mae.
She started Fannie Flagg Tattoos. I believe that was another thing she did.
I actually knew someone named... Oh, forget it.
On the phone, we have Mike and Richard. They will play. We will be the celebrity guests, and we'll do a version of Match Game here. Let's go live to our announcer, Sandberg, for the prizes. What are they playing for?
They're playing for an Apt electronics gift card.
Ooh. This is where everybody goes, ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, the production values on this show. Right?
A P-Quads pizza gift card. And a Chevy.
John, you sound like a trapped
like a
animal.
Ghost.
I got hurt.
Yes.
And a Chevy Drive Chicago mug.
White Thunder.
White Lightning.
Sorry. Well, obviously, Mike and Richard are fired up now. So let's go. And you want to meet the contestants?
Yes, I do. Let's meet these contestants. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good. Mike, where are you from?
Gary, Indiana.
Oh, you can't play. I'm really sorry. Let's go on to the next contestant.
When I asked him where he was from, he said Gary, Indiana, but let's not tell people that.
Oh, look at that. No,
Gary's fine.
Yes.
Gary's fine. The Osmonds were from Gary.
Richard is in Evanston. Richard is in the second chair. He will go second. So Mike will start.
Let's go. Mike, do you know how the game is played? You have to see if you can match our celebrities here. So I will read out the statement. You will fill in the blank. Got it?
Okay,
yeah. Here you go. Here
by the way,
go,
by the way, Mike, you sound super fired up, and I appreciate it.
Can you do me a favor? Call me when you wake up.
Yes. All right.
Here we go. You ready, Mike?
Yes, okay. I'm ready.
Okay, real simple. On an airplane, Andrea said to Dave, "I don't have a lot of confidence in this airline. I just saw the pilot, and he had a blank in his pocket."
Oh, see, that's the other thing. Because all the questions sound dirty, so you have to overreact when they're read.
That's right. So all of our celebrities, please write down your answers.
Could I hear the question one more time?
I will read it again. On an airplane, Andrea said to Dave, "I don't have a lot of confidence in this airline. I just saw the pilot, and he had a blank in his pocket." Rock Hudson is 65 today.
This is hard. This is fun. Can I look at someone else's answer?
Not from the 7.
It's just your own mind, Mayor.
Okay, I'm ready.
Is everybody ready?
Yep.
Okay, Mike, you want to give us your answer?
I'll say parachute.
A parachute. Oh, that's a good answer.
Very good answer.
Wow, I suck at this game already.
That is really good.
Wait, in his pocket.
Mike, I'm very proud of you. Okay.
Strong.
Let's start with Andrea. What did you say?
I said he has the gear shift in his pocket.
Gear shift. Oh.
Not a match.
But good answer.
Sorry.
Do you want to go to Mary on the 7th floor?
Yes, Mary up on the 7th floor.
I said break.
Can we not have Mary play the second part of this game?
That was a dumb question.
Break?
Crazy answer.
Is that break?
Didn't even you answers to a different question.
He went to new question.
You know how Mike sounds like Joe Walsh from the Eagles?
I was just about to say. Yeah.
Dave?
Are you on tour with the Eagles, Gary? Go ahead. Dave, you're next.
I said a map.
Oh, Matt, whoa, that's a good answer, too.
These are all good answers.
None of them, unfortunately, are as good as Mike's.
And no. Steve?
I was thinking of Dave. A tiny bottle of hooch.
Oh. Nice. Oh, not one. We did not have one.
You know, Mike, I'm going to give you one because we suck, and your answer was good.
So, Mary.
No, she can't play.
Oh, she can't play. I'm handing out the prizes. So, Mike, I'm going to give you a $25 gift card to Pequod's Pizza in Chicago and in Morton Grove, just dubbed the best pizza in Illinois by the Daily Meal.
Yeah, we're assuming, by the way, that Richard's going to win.
I'm also going to give you a ChevyDriveChicago.com and WGN Radio Stainless Steel travel mug, along with a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana.
And by the way, say hi to Don Henley. Big fan. All right, put these guys on hold, and let me grab Richard here. This is Richard. All right, go ahead there, game show host.
Richard, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You know how the match game is played, correct?
I do.
Do you remember? Do you watch it now? Do you watch it in reruns?
Yeah, Gene Rayburn, man.
Gene Rayburn.
I picture you with a lighter right now. Okay. So here we go. Let's see if we can match our celebrities. So here is... You ready?
I am ready.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Maureen Cochran said, "Everybody thinks my husband Steve is so serious, but at home he's a riot. Even his blank makes me laugh." Maureen Cochran said, "Everybody thinks my husband Steve is so serious, but at home he's a riot. Even his blank makes me laugh." Do we have all our answers in?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good. Okay, Richard, what's your answer?
His face.
His face.
Oh.
What?
All right.
What?
And for that great answer, I'm going to give you.
Yes.
Oh. What a huge jerk Richard turned out to be.
He was just, you know what he's trying to do? Trying to channel what we're going to pick.
He's trying to think like Maureen.
He meant to say cute face.
It's unbelievable. Richard, I am outraged. Go to me.
Yes,
go
that's
to me.
Right. Yes, Steve, what is your answer?
I said one answer. I changed it to face.
Oh. Yes.
You're on the board, Richard. You're a big winner,
that's
you big
funny
creep.
That's good. Andrea, what do you have?
I said his bald head.
His bald head.
His head makes me laugh.
That's yes, face.
That's very good.
Face. Yeah, they're connected.
Technically, let's go to the judges.
There you go, Mike.
Yes.
Mary Vandeville?
Say yes, okay.
I said head.
There you go. Yes. There's three.
This is huge. The head includes the face.
He only needed one. He's already at three, yeah. Dave.
I said his laundry.
His what? Laundry?
The hell kind of answer is laundry?
Well, that's okay. How I was thinking for the last one.
Steve, your laundry's right. Hilarious.
Why is my laundry funny?
What kind of boxers
those
you have?
Dirty
in there?
Shorts.
I'm just
they're
making
hilarious.
A note here.
They're Tommy Johns. They're expensive and they're comfortable. What did he win?
All right, Richard, you're getting an Apt gift card. Pleasing people since 1963. Visit the store in Glenview or online at abt.com. And you're also getting a Chevy Drive Chicago.com and WGN Radio Stainless Steel Travel Mug.
Yeah. Thanks for playing Match Games. 708 Texters. Yeah, you suck, Richard. Hold on.
It was great.
708 Texters says, Steve, I think Rose Carnarvon wagon must be in your studio. It's 9 o'clock. CLTV, welcome, and we're coming back on 720 WGN next. Live on CLTV and on 720 WGN. Emily Ferrante is here, and one of the stars of An American in Paris. She's delightful. Haven't you found her to be delightful in the past few minutes?
Yeah, because we all agree on the gifts that men should give women.
I'm not even sure we
shouldn't give them.
I just want to tell people, you've done so well in the off-air conversation. Why even do the interview?
Yeah,
why risk
it
at this point?
Yeah, let's just go get breakfast.
All right, so nice California girl. Song and dance.
Yeah.
What got you into theater? Did you have a great program in school?
I grew up doing community theater.
Okay.
I think I was kind of a, an outgoing child. My mom was looking for an
everything was a
for
musical?
Me. Everything, yeah, was a dance, song and dance. So.
As a performer as a kid in a small town in California, it had to be community theater, right? Probably didn't have a lot of outlets.
No, not a lot. I had a good community theater for our small town. But, that's kind of where I developed a passion for it, I think.
So you end up doing amazing stuff already in your young career, Wicked, Dreamgirls, and all that. How do you get from the small town in California to Broadway?
Well, I
and
went...
And don't tell me an airplane.
Well, it's the thing. No.
Yeah.
I went to college. I went to the Boston Conservatory.
Oh,
I got
very
studied
nice.
There for 4 years. Got my BFA and moved to New York City.
Were you intimidated, or did you believe in your talent? You couldn't wait to get going.
I think the second part. I think I knew what I wanted to do, and I was ready to pound the pavement and get a job and start doing what I love. And
better luckily, singer or dancer?
I'm a singer. I mean, I do dance, but I'm not one of the dancers in the show.
But you do have to move.
Yeah.
On stage.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because Dave's an exceptional dancer, but he can't sing a lick.
Yeah, that's true. We'd be a great team.
So remind everybody, not just the story of An American in Paris, but the part you play.
I play Milo Davenport, and she's an American heiress who comes to Paris and meets Jerry Mulligan.
An heiress in Paris.
I know. I always say that. I'm like, God, she's an art patron. Maybe that's better.
Right,
an art patron in Paris. And she meets Jerry Mulligan, who is an ex-GI, and he's an artist there. And we pick up right after the liberation of France. So it's right at the end of World War II. So everyone's kind of picking themselves up again.
Yeah. With all the ups and downs that come from a love story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Real life or on stage.
Yeah.
Who's the actor
plays? McGee Maddox plays Jerry Mulligan.
Had you ever done anything with him before?
I haven't. No, he is a principal dancer from Toronto Ballet. So this is his first musical.
He's an amazing dancer.
Oh, yeah. He's incredible.
Well.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, right? This is the thing that always fascinates me. You got to fall in love every night.
Yeah.
You got to fall in love every night, which I assume is fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But in doing that, you have to have chemistry with this person.
Of
have you
course.
Ever been in a performance where you've been cast with someone where you weren't feeling it?
You
don't have to say who, but have you been in that position?
I mean, yeah, that's why it's called acting. But yes, some people are easier to fall in love with than others. And
Like you and I, Dave, we're adorable.
I interviewed an actress. She was so funny. I asked her a similar question for a previous play that was here, and she's because they had really good chemistry with her actor, you know, the actor on stage.
Yeah.
And she said, that's okay. My husband's an actor, too. He doesn't mind. You know, as long as we both come home to each other, it's okay if I come home and say, he was a great kisser. It's yeah. okay as long as you come back home. And
That's interesting because, yeah. You know, as much as you'd want to talk about work, I wouldn't think you'd bring that part of work home. Right. You wouldn't believe the guy I made out with today.
Yeah, I don't talk about that with my fiance, no. Yeah. I mean, there's no point, you know. It's like, we know what happens, but it's fine, you know.
Right. What happens at work stays at work.
It's just like,
when are you getting married?
Probably next year, next May.
Wow, exciting. Yeah. Who's this guy now? Wow, because we should approve him. We're old friends.
Yeah, we should approve
him. We've known you for 20 minutes. We should approve him.
He's my John Bambury. He's my my best friend. He just graduated from Juilliard. He's an actor as well, so he gets it.
Oh, so he knows the business.
He knows the business. He gets it. He gets me being on the road. And
well, that's interesting. Now, I assume you've dated outside of the business.
I've been dating him for over 7 years now.
Oh.
But yeah, mostly I've dated a guitarist. I've always kind of dated someone who like is in the arts.
Okay.
Because it's kind of hard to sometimes
to. It's hard to explain
connect.
Otherwise.
Yeah. They're like, why do you go to work at night? Or, yeah. It's weird.
How come we can never do anything together?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 7 years is a long time. Yeah. And he's an actor. Was he thoroughly dramatic when he dropped popped the question? Did he do a whole stage number?
No, but he was, it was very great. Yeah, we were in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, actually. We were camping. We were in the Grand Teton Mountains, and yes, it was pretty perfect. And I cried.
Did you see it coming, or did you have to fake that part?
I didn't really see it coming. You know, I knew it would eventually come. We'd talked about it, but in that moment, no. So it definitely took me by surprise.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, he did it right.
So he's obviously a good gift giver. That's what we were talking about off the air.
He is a great gift giver. Yeah. I am not the best gift giver, but I would think I'd give a better gift than a shirt. No offense.
It's okay. Pete's gone.
Yeah. And Dave, I don't know if you know this, but they have this service in the Grand Tetons, if you want to pop a proposal, where they take the note and they put it on a ram's horn and then it wanders up to your campsite.
As big horn sheep.
Well, it'd be an elk. An elk would come up.
Yeah.
Big horn sheep.
Now, you don't seem like the camping type. And
I know. People are always, I love to camp.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking you're hating the camping trip and then he surprises you with the proposal.
No, we love to camp together. I think it's something we kind of, you know, that's not in the theater business that we like to do and get away from it all.
Did you ever camp when you were a kid?
I never did. I need indoor plants.
We used to camp all the time.
Yeah, I grew up camping too.
Yeah, same here.
I don't like the.
You know what I like
no
to do?
Bathrooms.
Camping now? 4-star hotel.
That's
called glamping.
Glamping. It's called Airbnb.
Yeah, exactly.
Airbnb, exactly.
Airbnb in the mountains.
Yeah, as long as you don't have to sleep where there might be bugs crawling on you, totally fine.
Well, that better not be in the Airbnb, right? And I've got a couple of nieces, beautiful nieces, who are little actresses. Well, they're not so little anymore, 15 and 12.
Okay.
So I assume you work with some kids. What do you tell parents? What do you tell kids? What do you tell young girls that are getting into business?
I mean, I tell them if they're serious and they can't imagine doing anything else, then go for it. If you can imagine doing something else, maybe go
do
for
it.
That. Because it's a tough career. It
it's
has a lot
be in
of ups
your blood.
And downs. It's I mean, you've got to have a passion. You've got to have a drive. Because that's half the battle is really, you know, putting yourself out there and going for it. And
being told no a lot.
Yeah, we get rejection all the time. So you got to be able to handle it. And sometimes you can't. But, you know, it's harder than you think.
And you're sometimes doing 8 shows a week
sometimes. Yeah, we do 8 shows
too,
a week.
So you don't really get to see the city in which you're in a lot.
Yeah. I mean, if we don't have rehearsal during the day, we try to make the most of it. But, yeah, you kind of got to take care of yourself throughout the day. And, you got to do a show at night and you can't go crazy. So
we're flooding you with things to do.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Pizza,
I love it. Oh,
la,
please.
La,
no, we have day off. I'm for it. I'm doing it.
Well, again, theater is where? Which theater?
Theater is where? We are at the Oriental Theater.
The beautiful Oriental Theater, right around the corner, basically. Get your tickets, BroadwayInChicago.com. I know you have to run and do a couple other things, but it's great to meet you.
Great to meet you, too. Thanks
for
having me.
Yeah, I'm already a fan.
Great. Well, thank you.
Yes. Yes. And it's an American in Paris, BroadwayInChicago.com, at the Oriental. Limited run, only 3 weeks now. Don't miss it. Okay. Back after this, David Eigenberg from Chicago Fire is coming in too on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
923, the Mooch is cursing. The president is excited about all his knowledge of learning what a bill is and how to get one passed. Oh, and by the way, the Republicans didn't last night. Craig Melvin is normally in the midst of all of this and on MSNBC every day. Does a great job. And NBC News correspondent Craig Melvin is also busy talking to the famous Lou Adams, coach of Orr Academy's basketball team here in town. He's going to be part of the show with Sunday Night with Megyn Kelly. And Craig joins us now for a moment before he has to run off and listen to politicians yell at each other. Good morning, Craig.
Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, pal. And I'm a fan. Nice to have you on. So this is kind of cool because I think this is a kind of a well-kept secret in town, and it shouldn't be.
You know, it was one of those things that I did not know about the story myself until we saw a newspaper article a couple of months ago. And we had a team of producers that immediately hit the ground and started going back and forth to Chicago and chronicling these guys. And it has turned out to be, granted I've got a biased opinion because it's my story, but it's turned out to be, I think, a fascinating tale of the kind of difference that one man can actually make in the lives of children. The Chicago violence story has been told, it's been overtold, arguably. We know what's happening in certain parts of Chicago, so we didn't want to do that story. We wanted to tell a story about kids who had managed to avoid that life and how they've done it. And here's a guy who, as you know, and certainly as Dave would know, they've taken this, they took not a ragtag bunch. I mean, that's probably a bit of an overstatement, but they took a group of kids who on the basketball court, they were good, but they weren't great. They weren't the best.
Right.
And he convinced them that they could be. And it's just, you know, we're very excited about it.
Well, it feels like a movie. It feels like one of those great sports movies, but the ongoing work that goes on every day, all of us, hopefully, anybody that ever played sports in school, hopefully you got a coach that meant a lot to you. The same way a great teacher, a great guidance counselor, whatever. But what Lou Adams has done, what the program has done for these kids, is really a lifesaver.
And not just the kids, you know, and that's one of the things we've discovered. You know, it's sports is, I've always said that they're a handful of things that bring us together still.
Yep.
Food, music, sports. And in this community, when these kids, all of a sudden, they started winning games they weren't supposed to win, and then this entire neighborhood rallied behind these kids in this school because, you know, as you know, Orb Academy and this part of Chicago, this isn't always where you see the best stories coming out.
That's exactly right.
And all of a sudden, these guys they had something to share about for months on end. And Coach Lou, such a compelling character. You see him. In fact, the story starts out with not to give away too much, but our story starts out with Lou being Lou. You know, coaching these kids on the sideline, screaming and shouting at times, frothing at the mouth.
Right.
We had to edit a fair amount of it out. but he, you know, as he said to me, you know, I love him, but sometimes I have to love him hard.
That's a great slogan. That's a great line.
He's loving him hard on the sideline. But he's such a compelling character. And we spend some time digging into the things that have made him one of those guys who's able to reach these kids. I don't know how much you know about his background. He grew up in Tunica, Mississippi.
Yep.
And he grew up in Tunica, Mississippi. I mean, Tunica now is probably not a place that you would visit on a weekend. But back then when he grew up there, it was a different kind of poverty. I mean, he talks about, you know, no running water and outhouses. And that's how this guy grew up. And he didn't grow up in the 20s and 30s. He grew up in the 60s.
Right.
So it was the way in which he grew up, he contends, that has helped him relate to these kids and what they deal with on a daily basis.
Well, yeah, and a black man in Mississippi in the 60s, come on. You can imagine some of the things he saw. So the things he deals with the kids at Orr, the other thing, Craig, I like about this and the way it pays itself forward is the little brothers and the little sisters in the neighborhood who see all the good things that these kids are going through. Well, it inspires them to get into programs and do the right thing.
Yes. We forget sometimes, Steve, that it's kids are, you know, and I hate to use that word, young people, they're not as dumb and slow as some adults would like to think that they are. And by that I mean they know the perception that exists of their school,
yep.
of their community, of
yep.
the neighborhood. They know that they are not supposed to amount to a great deal. They know that. And when you have messages like that reinforced day after day, year after year, after a while, you start to believe that. And then all of a sudden, something comes along, and it shatters that paradigm that's been created. And like you said, you see these not just other kids, but your friends who have managed to defy expectations. Lou right now is out in Las Vegas in an AAU tournament with some of these guys. One of the other things that we discovered, it's you know, if you think about it, it's really not a it's a concept that's fairly simple, but I didn't really think about it until he said it. So, you know, this isn't just about basketball. Part of what we do is we make sure that they are so busy every day, every night, on the weekends, they don't have time for trouble.
Right.
And so it's basketball practice, it's camps, it's watching. I mean, it consumes these kids. And a lot of these guys, you talk to them, and they'll tell you, they're not going to the NBA. They're not delusional. I mean, they know that, you know, they're good. They're not that good. But what they do know, and what they do expect, is that round little ball is going to be their way out. And Lou has planted that seed, and all these kids, all of them, and we talk to all of them. They buy into it. We talk to a number of their mothers. The parents as well, they buy into it. It's just, you know, I've done a number of stories for the Sunday night show this season, and, you know, good stories. But this is probably the one that I'm most excited about.
I'm not surprised, and I think you ought to be proud of it. And it's Sunday night with Megyn Kelly, 6 o'clock Chicago time. Check your local listing, 7 in New York and L.A. and around the country. And it's good talking to you, Craig. Good luck with the rest of the day, and thanks for telling us more about Lou.
There was a time in our business, Steve, where we had to struggle for content.
Not anymore, pal.
We had to find things to talk about on the radio every day. Those times have passed.
Yeah, not anymore. And by the way, if you come across Mooch today, be careful. He'll curse at you. Duck. Duck fast. That's Craig Melvin, Sunday night with Megyn Kelly.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, you recognize the music. It's David Eigenberg and his new best friend, Pete McMurray, in studio. I had the pleasure. Not your best friend?
No. Oh, this guy. Oh, man, I love him, man. I dressed him this morning. Are you kidding me? No, I was looking at Andrea, and she's from Orland Park.
Yeah.
How'd you get through your life without being called Andrea?
I know. It was always
Andrea. Hey, Andrea.
Right. Yeah, here in the Midwest.
Side.
Andrea.
Especially Southside.
Anyway, sorry.
Now, here's the thing. The Goombay Bash
and
the H Foundation.
Yes.
I was lucky enough to host this thing in the early days. Probably, I don't know, the second, third, fourth, fifth, somewhere in there.
27 years ago.
Yeah, did a bunch of 17 years now.
17.
So don't screw this up. This is a good group.
17.
No, he's throwing it at you.
This is a good group.
Trying to figure out how old you are.
You know, we were talking about David comes over to me. He goes, "Are you related to Dean Richards?" And I said, "No, Billy Joel.
And that was a good one. That got me.
Yeah. I'll take the hat off. You'd really say it. The H Foundation benefit, 17th annual. It's to find a cure for cancer. There's limited tickets available. It's probably the biggest party in the summer.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Grand Ballroom at Navy Pier.
Yep. No black tie. Throw on a Hawaiian shirt. Come on out.
It's a good time. It's fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Well, these guys, you know, they get 100% of the funds that they raise get thrown in there. They don't have the big executive pulling down 6-7 figures to, you know, doing that
stuff.
It
all goes to research.
So they got a lot. Yeah. Goes to research. And
for a kid from Naperville, did you ever think I'm going to be hosting a shindig at Navy Pier? Look at you.
I never dreamed I'd be doing with Pete McMurray either. Forget that.
Oh, the thrills
never end. Because he wasn't even born when I was in high school.
The perks never end.
I never thought I'd amount to anything. Neither did my parents.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, the guys you're running around with, that, you know, do you think anything's going to go right for you? And it took me a long time.
Yeah. Where'd you go to high school?
Naperville Central.
Yeah.
Yep. I grew up with, I went to junior high and high school with Sean Payton.
Is that right?
Yeah, played football with him. I stunk. What do you mean? Where did he go? Where did he go? Nah, yeah, yeah. We he was good at he had talent and I had none. And I've made a career out of that same thing.
Well, size in football back in the day.
What are you saying?
I'm 56.
And what are you saying about size?
Well, you were probably a scat back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were fast.
That's like one of those scat, guys, man.
You were one of those guys in practice that guys like me could never catch and hit.
That's right.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah. No concussions here, man. I made it through.
So the Goombay Bash.
The Goombay.
The Goombay Bash, tremendous food, great entertainment. Wear your flip-flops, wear your sundresses, wear your board shorts, and have a great time. Funding grants, basic science research at the Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center and Northwest University. Goombay Bash, GOOMBAYBASH.com is where you get tickets. Now, Andrea,
you are taking care of everything.
I'm helping you with the plug.
We don't even have
I got
to talk.
No memory. I can't remember my lines for the TV shows.
Hey, listen, dude, if I let you talk, I'm done.
What do you mean?
Andrea would like to ask both of you Sex and the City questions, but since you were the only one that was on the show, I feel like they'll mostly be directed to you.
What do you mean? I think, didn't you guest on it or something?
I was the shoe guy.
Nice, he was.
I was.
You one of Samantha's boyfriends.
Oh, you got funky with the feet.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh.
That was a band I was in.
What, are we going to go clean?
What was the question?
You always play such great characters. You're so successful, Sex in the City. So successful, Chicago Fire. Do people still come up to both of
both of me? No, they come up to both of me.
Do they recognize you as both characters?
Yeah, I get like it's like a 50-50 now. It's starting to tip towards Christopher Herman now in the Chicago thing, Chicago Fire, and but you know, and people are always really lovely to me. You know, if you play a bad guy and you're an actor. Yeah. It's not an easy go. People they want to be like, oh, I'm just kidding, but they go like, you're a real dirtbag.
Like
or whatever.
If you played Burger, you know, I'm sure people come up to you and they'd come up to you and not like you so much.
Exactly,
you were lovable, Steve.
Yeah, I know. So I'm grateful that I've played nice guys because I see that finger. Oh, I'm a pointer, and I pointed it at my wife, and she said, point that thing at me one more time.
And look what happened.
She broke it.
Yeah, if you were watching on a TV, you can see it.
Bingo, brains on the wall.
How about this facility you guys shoot the show in? This is like the Chicago's best-kept secret, right? This giant Hollywood soundstage in Chicago.
Yeah, it used to be the Ryerson Steel Factory.
Right.
And I grew up in Naperville with Jody Panarella, and her dad was the managing director over there, and that was a small world thing. So we work in an old steel factory.
You were hoping to get a job at the steel factory when you were about to be thrown out of Naperville Central.
Just about, yeah. Right. It's not far from the mark. I went to Washburn Trade School on the south side.
Okay.
Back in the day when there was vocational training in America. We got to get back to that.
No kidding. Every kid doesn't have to go to college.
Exactly, because I was not one of those guys, if you know what I'm saying. Listen to me speak. I was not college material.
We got a text that says, have you seen your picture in the halls at Naperville Central?
You know, one of my favorite things about that high school, because I received no awards there,
right.
You know, on graduation night, they were like, didn't even flip my little bandella
thing. They said, get out.
They went, yeah, you're done. Yeah. So they called me back they honored me, the Hall of Fame of, I don't know, success or whatever, and they wrote down that I had done, it was like things that you had done. It was like, you know, Sex in the City, which I thought was funny because it's a little conservative out there.
Yeah.
Because it's a show about, you know, doing stuff that's fun and, you know, should be talked about.
Right.
And then it said...
Yeah, we know. We saw the show.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I did an episode of Seinfeld, and I never told them that. I'm outing myself because I never did an episode of Seinfeld, but they got it wrong.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Oh.
So they put it on the bio.
Yeah.
And I
let it fly.
Well, you don't embarrass somebody. They were, you know, they just got it wrong, right?
Yeah, no. I wanted to feel like I was on Seinfeld.
They looked at your bio, and they went, we got to add something.
Something better than that.
Yeah. So what were you doing when you got Chicago Fire?
I was, I actually got my general contractor's license. I was going back to the trades because, believe it or not, we're not multimillionaires, and the money from Sex in the City, which was good but not great, it ran out. It was 7-year run after that of like nothing but wastelands. People always think that, you know, it's just like, you know, you go from, you know, what do you call it, like a good, from buffet bar to the buffet bar, and it's not. So I was going back to work, and this job came up, and I lucked out.
Yeah, and how about the fact that everybody wants to do TV? When we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
Movie actors would go, oh, TV, no. The biggest stars are tripping over themselves to do TV.
Absolutely. You know what? Because, you know what? Life on the road is hard.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it.
But the quality's great.
Yeah.
Because the competition's so hard in TV now, so TV has to be better than ever.
There's over 400 scripted television shows on various formats now.
And that's just the reality.
But you know what's so great about Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, is that they're so realistic.
Chicago Med.
You use Chicago Med, too. You use Chicago firefighters on their off days, of course, as performers, as extras. I mean, and they even say it's true. It's realistic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got a text about an hour ago. I was doing another, you know, press push for
a lesser show.
Yeah, a lesser show. And somebody called me Steve on a show. And a real firefighter went like, "Hey, way to go, Steve. Nice job on blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "You believe that, these people?"
Right.
So
it's funny, though, because there's a factory or I guess an apartment complex over 18th Street by the bridge that they use a lot. And
at first
I thought, oh, my God, that complex is on fire. Then it was on fire for 4 days in a row. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, there's some Chicago fire again."
Yeah, you can't go to dinner in the city or anywhere. As soon as a fire breaks out, people look at you like, "Dude, right.
You got to go." I'm like, "I'm the last guy you want to save you.
Come back for the appetizer."
"No, you don't want me to get out of my chair."
Right.
I would want you to save me.
All right, Pete.
Well, I would save you.
Pete, since you don't have a show regularly, this is a perfect opportunity for you to be.
Let's go. I'm sorry.
You can interview giant star David Eichenberg.
There you go.
You know what I love about this guy? Number one, he does tons of charity work around Chicago. He always gives back to the community. But every time I see him, he has an ailment or a broken bone.
Yes, I do.
It was your broken shoulder, your arm, now it's your finger.
Yeah, and you volunteered to take me to get my colonoscopy.
Oh, sweet.
I had to get
That's what friends are for.
We ran into each other. This is a true story at Home Depot on North Avenue, and he's screaming
at
me.
They don't do colonoscopies.
No, they don't. So we're talking. He's like, "Hey, I got a colonoscopy." I asked him to do something on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm like, "You need a ride.
Somebody's
got to take you."
He volunteered.
Here's the thing. He is one of the nicest. Pete, I'm talking about here. He's one of the nicest guys. He would do that. I'm not surprised by that. Pete's got a service. He's making money any way he can. It's the colonoscopy mobile.
That's it.
Yeah. He just takes people in for colonoscopy.
I am writing that down. That is a great idea.
No, don't give
him
an idea.
It really is. Colonoscopy.
He was talking mustard
by Pete
McMurray.
All right. When you're doing Chicago Fire, because people ask this all the time, how much of the heavy lifting are you guys doing?
Oh, we get beat. We got
it looks like a super physical
shoot. On Wednesday, I was beat. I was sitting on the ground. I drank 16 bottles. I'm not making this up. 16 bottles of water on Wednesday.
Because it's super hot outside and you're wearing the gear.
I never hit the head. Never went to the bathroom.
Yeah, you didn't have to.
Yeah, I don't need to do
that. How much does the gear weigh?
We weigh about, I'm a buck 40. The gear weighs 75. And sometimes I can only pick up a 110-pound person. I prefer a woman. But yeah, I literally max out because 110 plus 75 puts me over the tipping scale.
That's
I should
crazy.
Fall over.
Oh.
But no, we get beat. We don't have people that do stuff for us. So when we're like hauling, like I was beat.
Well, you got to look like you're stressed out by what you're doing as the character, right?
Yeah.
It's not great when somebody comes out, spritz him right. Now.
No,
it's got to be sweat. It's got to be real sweat, real
man's
work.
They're trying to dry us off to match. And I'm like, it's a useless effort because they come out with like little, you know, paper napkins.
The continuity people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, "Hey, we gotta, I'm like, "Why? As soon as you leave, it's going to be just wet again." So
the show that actually does sweat.
Brad Pitt's tired of probably playing your stunt double and your body
double. Brad's got other stuff going on.
He's got a ton of stuff.
Yeah, he's busy. Brad. All right, now you have a text or question?
My phone is blowing up. Everybody from my mother to my friends love you.
What did Mom say?
Is Nick, I love him on Chicago Fire.
Hi, Mom. What's Mom's name?
Marietta.
Marietta!
Oh, God. She's
You got to come to work with your daughter one of these days.
Now she's not going to stop texting me all day.
Well, you take Mom out to the set and then maybe she gets a hug from David.
Oh, God. That would make her year. Okay, this is a text question. This is from Audrey Wayne, who we love so much.
Sure.
Mike's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Do you she wants to know if you're more of a Carrie, Miranda, Samantha, or Charlotte.
What does that mean?
What kind of girl am I?
Sex in the City.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I used to be a Samantha, and now I'm a Charlotte now. I'm married, I'm happy, I don't want to be out.
You got kids.
Yeah, I got kids. I got it all out of my... I got married at 38, so I don't want to...
Yeah, you had a nice run.
Yeah, I had a great run. It was a lot of fun and a lot of wonderful people in my life, and now I've got the best, though.
Pete, what are you?
Yeah.
Are you more of a... Pete, I see you as more of a Miranda.
No, Sarah.
No, he's a
Cynthia Nixon.
He's
she
a
was
Samantha.
Crabby during that series.
Samantha.
Samantha, sure.
No. Yeah. No, what was...
But I've settled down now.
You with the clothes and the shoes.
Right.
Yeah. The clothes and the shoes.
Yeah, okay.
You're always out.
You are. He is all about the clothes.
I'm okay.
He is about the shoes,
So, by the way, what time does Dahl need that shirt back?
That's the joke I was looking for today.
Don't think of it. Nobody can think it's Steve Dahl's name. Poor guy.
Brian Wilson thing, but no, the it's Steve Dahl.
It's Steve Dahl. Yeah, it's Steve Dahl.
This is the Goon Bay Bash. It's Hawaiian. You don't get dressed up.
I'm familiar.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You hosted.
Yeah, many years. Navy Pier, Aeon Grand Ballroom, 5 to midnight Saturday. It's going to be a great time. Promise you.
Please come on out.
Yeah.
We're doing pictures and stuff.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, hey, I'm not going to be in my snooty mode. I'm going to do my, hey, let's take pictures. You know me, I'm a real.
You're not going to be normal, difficult, David.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're so nice, though. Everybody loves you.
Thank you. Well, you guys are lovely, so it's lovely to be lovely with you.
Every year, the H Foundation.
Sounds kind of like, you're so sweet.
It sounds like you've been drinking. Every year, the H Foundation.
Can you come back every
the
show?
Goon Bay Bash, and the money is the Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center. We
these
know
are
the
wonderful
great work
people
and the miracles
doing wonderful
they
things.
Do every day.
Yeah.
HFoundation.org. Or GoombayBash.com. Closing thoughts, Pete?
It's a great organization, and everybody knows somebody that's been touched by cancer.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, let's beat cancer. These guys did it right. Chicago guys put together this party 17 years ago, and here we are.
And can I honor, say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Man, Pete, you're all over me, man. Like I was hammering you all day. No. Cancer has touched so many of our lives, you know, and my friends, and they've all pulled through, man. Miraculously, and there's so much great work being done, especially at Northwestern at Lurie here, and they are amazing human beings.
Are you done?
Well, the pride of Naperville.
I don't know about that one.
No, it's probably that's probably George.
They asked
mayor.
Me to go.
Yeah.
George is the best.
All the best, man. Great seeing you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And congratulations on all the success of the Chicago Fire. And I know you guys will do a great job with the Goon Bay Bash on Saturday night, tomorrow night. Bill and Wendy next 720 WGN.